Good afternoon. Welcome to Senate Finance. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, April 4th, 2018. The time is 2:10 p.m. I'm Co-Chairman Anna McKinnon. With me this afternoon, Vice Chairman Bishop.
Good afternoon.
Senator Machicki.
Good afternoon.
Senator Stevens.
Good afternoon.
We do have a quorum to do business. Senator Olson is excused today. Senator Hoffman is in a budget subcommittee. And Senator Von Imhoff is in Health and Human Social Services, providing them a quorum to do their business. On today's agenda, we have two items. We have, again, set aside SB 92. It'll be brought up tomorrow morning. That is the derelict vessel. On today's agenda this afternoon, SB 122, OCS Citizen Review Panel, and HB 31, Sexual Assault Training and Exam Kits. Is there anything to come before the committee before we begin? Seeing and hearing none, I'd like to invite Reneva Moss to the microphone. Ms. Moss, if you could identify yourself for the record. Committee members, this is an introduction of the bill. Senator Bishop, could I have a motion on the CS?
Yes, ma'am. I move committee substitute for Senate Bill 122, version 30-LS-00. 47/Romeo before the committee as our working document.
I'll object for purposes of understanding the CS.
Madam Chair, for the record, Reneva Moss, staff to Senator Coghill. The last version of the bill, the main function of the bill was to transfer the Citizens Review Panel to the legislative branch under the Office of the Ombudsman. And in Ledge Finance trying to work with the fiscal note, it was determined that there is a close tie between federal dollars through the Child Protection Act and the general fund dollars that are used to fund the Citizens Review Panel. So there would have had to have been some creative accounting in order for us to move the CRP to the ombudsman's. So we decided that what we would do is withdraw that but require some more accountability between the Citizens Review Panel and OCS and between the Citizens Review Panel and the legislature. So those sections of the bill in version O that transferred Citizens Review Panel to the legislature have been deleted. And what the bill now does is it, first of all, directs the Office of Children's Services to provide the panel with reasonable and necessary professional and technical assistance. It also adds two new subsections, one which statutorily directs the Citizens Review Panel to facilitate public participation in developing and implementing child protection policies and practices. That was the original intent of Congress creating citizens' review panels. It also reinserts language that the panel be composed of volunteer members broadly representative of the state and adds a provision that at least one member from each of the five administrative regions of OCS be on the panel. Then it directs the panel to review policies and procedures of OCS on an annual basis and to report their findings to the legislature, and by reporting it to them, they would deliver the report to the Senate Secretary and the House Chief Clerk. Then it adds a section that requires the panel and the department to prepare a joint report to the governor, legislature, and public every 3 years. The report must include an assessment of the panel, any panel staff, and the responsiveness of OCS and any constraints. That report also would be filed with the Senate Secretary and the House Clerk. There were a couple of technical amendments. One was a definition where the term near fatality was in existing statute as a definition but not in the statutes itself. And then there's transition language in the last section that preserves the existing Citizens Review Panel. I'm open to questions.
Are there questions on the CS? I'll remove my objection. Is there further objection to adoption of the CS for Senate Bill 122 Finance / R? Seeing and hearing none, / R is before the committee and adopted. Ms. Moss, do you have further comments on the need for the bill in front of us? What is it trying to solve for Alaska?
Yes, Madam Chair. What we're trying to solve is, first of all, make a public awareness of the Citizens Review Panel. You'll note that in existing statute, it's referred to as the Citizens Review Panel. Few people know what that means, so we have added the term Child Protection Citizen Review Panel. Then we are trying to make the panel accountable, have a purpose that the legislature and OCS can benefit from. That's why we are requiring a more stringent relationship between the Citizens Review Panel and OCS, and a better communication between the Citizens Review Panel and the legislature. The Citizens Review Panel, in the research and the traveling that they do, get to see firsthand the operation of OCS. And by utilizing that experience and coming back to the legislature with policy recommendations, we feel we can improve child protection in Alaska.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record. Ms. Moss, please continue.
Madam Chair, that is pretty much all I have.
Are there questions from committee members? Thank you, Ms. Moss. I'd like to open the public hearing on the CS for Senate Bill 122 Finance / R. Is there anyone wishing to testify? Public hearing is closed. Senator Bishop, we will need some new fiscal notes. With that, I direct the committee to set this bill aside. If there are any concerns, I'd like amendments by noon tomorrow. Thank you, Ms. Moss.
Thank you.
Brief at ease. We're back on the record. Senate Finance, Wednesday, April 4th, 2018. The next bill before us is the Senate CS for House Bill Number 31, State Affairs. The version is / U. This is the first time we've heard this bill. I'd like to invite Representative Garantar and Diana Rhodes to the microphones. You can identify yourself for the record, introduce your bill, and then we'll do a walkthrough of the section.
Excuse me. Good afternoon to the members of the Senate Finance Committee, and thank you, Madam Co-Chair. With me is Diana Rose, my staff. I'm Representative Garantar from District 19 in Anchorage. Really, really appreciate the opportunity to present House Bill 31 to you today. House Bill 31 is just one step in addressing the issue of untested rape kits and rape kit reform, as I call it, in the state of Alaska. We have long known that we have issues with domestic violence and sexual assault, in fact, some of the worst rates in the nation, and it's something that we've long struggled with as we try to address public safety needs for our state. We began working on this issue in 2014 after being contacted by an organization called End the Backlog, and this has been a national effort once this was discovered that there was all this evidence. I mean, that's what essentially these untested rape kits are. Once it was discovered that there were many, many of these untested kits around the country, there was a national effort that began, and that's how I learned about it, is when that organization reached out to me. And so we began working on it then. The first step was to complete a statewide audit. And at that time, Governor Walker also became engaged in the process, and they tried to complete the statewide audit working with law enforcement agencies voluntarily. And then thankful to Senator Coghill last year for allowing us to put a provision into Senate Bill 55 that allowed us to actually require that and make it mandatory. So the first step was getting that audit done to understand the extent of the problem in Alaska. And so we know we have a few thousand untested kits at this point. And as we're working through the process of figuring out how many kits we've had, it's also included a process of how we can do things differently and how we can do things better. A big part of what's emerged out of the national effort is, a push to do this kind of reform and look at it in several different ways. And so this bill has a few of those components in it. One of the components is around training of law enforcement officials. We know that most of our law enforcement officials either go to the State Trooper Academy or to the Academy in Anchorage. And right now what the statute says is there's a requirement for 12 hours of training on domestic violence, but there's no requirement for training on sexual assault. And so it adds in provisions to require the 12 hours of training on sexual assault. This was brought to my attention by folks who work in the field. In fact, the senator who Senator McKinnon knows as a former director of STAR, and having worked on these issues, it was actually a director that followed her that brought this to my attention. And she said it that in Alaska, the response that you might receive if you're a victim of sexual assault kind of depended on where you were in the state, because there might be some differences in training. I think Senator McKinnon can speak to this, that we, do a pretty good job of it, but this sort of more formalizes it, puts it in the statute of what the expectation is, and then we know going forward that all law enforcement officials will get that good training. Another piece of the effort is around a victim-centered approach to actually getting the kits tested. When a sexual assault happens, the really, really unfortunate situation is that the evidence that needs to be collected has to be collected within just a short amount of time, better if it's within 72 hours. And so someone having just been sexually assaulted might be in such a state of mind that it's difficult for them to make the decision at that moment as to whether they want to move forward with the criminal justice system, press charges, go through that, or if they are just going to choose a different option, and we want to make sure that a victim has all of the options available. And so it puts in statute an anonymous reporting option, and that would be the option where a victim wants to have the kit done and the evidence collected, but does not choose to move forward with law enforcement at that time. That's really important, because what often happens after an individual has been assaulted is that they need some period of time to process that traumatic event, get supports around them, and then move into the decision about moving forward. So they often start out with more of what's the anonymous report, and that way the evidence is collected in a timely fashion, and then later choose to move forward with the law enforcement option. And so that's the second option. A victim could have that option, choose to use that option actually at the time of the assault. But for those that choose not to, then there's the second option for the anonymous reporting. There's been some work done on this nationally through the Department of Justice, and they actually put out a white paper last year and really outlined why it's so important to have a victim-centered approach, so that the individual themselves gets to choose, which path they want to go down. So that's the second piece of the bill, and that I think will be a really important improvement. We've worked closely with the folks at STAR and other individuals through Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault to really make sure that we're listening to the people who know best in terms of the advocates that work with victims every day. So it's been a great collaboration, and we've really appreciated all of their time and energy towards this. And the third piece of this bill is the ongoing audit. We know that it costs about $1,500 to process a kit, and so that's a significant cost when you think we have several thousand that we may want to process. That's going to be into the millions of dollars. It's going to take some period of time for that to happen. And the idea with continuing the audit, now that it's been completed once, then it shouldn't be difficult to complete again. In the fiscal notes, that's reported. There's no additional cost associated with it. And that'll give the legislature a way to track this, because this is going to have to be a multi-year effort to do things like this first set of reforms. There are some additional things we're looking at that could improve the system, maybe as a next year effort. And then as we have money or as there are grant opportunities, we want to make sure we move through the process of getting all the backlog of untested kits in Alaska tested. Right now, the state of Alaska has support from two federal Department of Justice grants. The first grant was used to form what's called the SAKI, the Sexual Assault Kit Initiative, and it's a group of law enforcement officials and advocates that are working together and looking into some of the reforms and things that can be done without legislative action. That's been a really positive effort. It's led to a couple of things I think are really important. When we first started working on this, we discovered that the kits were sent out from Anchorage with no tracking information. So there was no way to know whether a kit that left Anchorage and went to Bethel and then was sent out to another village or to a VPSO, whether that kit had been used, unused, whether it had been thrown away. There was just no sort of chain of custody, if you will. And that process has now been implemented through the work of the SAKI and looking at what kind of reforms can happen. So that's going to be a very positive thing, so that there's always a way to track the history of that particular kit, and then a victim would have the ability to track it as well. They've also implemented a system where all kits are going to be sent to the Anchorage Crime Lab, and that will be the place where storage takes place. That's going to be a very positive thing as well, so that there's not possibility that things are shoved off in evidence rooms or, you know, otherwise could be lost, since it's that critical evidence information. So those are a couple of the reforms that came out of the SAKI so far, and that group has support from the first federal Department of Justice grant. That grant also is providing some funding, so we have just sent out our first batches of kits and to be tested, the kits that we have that are part of our backlog. And then there's a second grant that the state received that's focused more on training, so that we can increase our capacity for processing and improve the work that's happening at our crime lab. So those are really important components of that, and that work's going to continue. And the third piece, the audit, will help engage the legislature with that work, as well as give us an update on our numbers, and that way we can figure out how we're going to find dollars to do the testing and then really be able to evaluate what kind of success we've had. In other states, it's been described by law enforcement in a recent documentary that I saw that's coming out this month called I Am Evidence. It's going to be released on HBO. Senator McKinnon was able to join and co-sponsor with me a preview of that movie here in the Capitol. And a law enforcement official in that movie talks about how testing these untested kits is, you know, the biggest opportunity he's ever known of to improve public safety. Because what's happening is that there used to be, the thinking was that some of these assaulters only had one victim. But now what we know is that many of these individuals are, in fact, serial assaulters, and they have many victims. And in some cases, the reason a kit was not tested was because in that particular assault, it was a known perpetrator, a known victim. So there was no question about the identity. So the testing of the kit wasn't necessary to prosecute in that case. But now what we know is that individual may have been involved in many other sexual assaults, and so by processing that kit, we may be able to link them to other crimes. And in fact, that's what's happening across the country, is they're finding people who even have crossed state lines. And so once we start getting our information back and then we're able to move forward with prosecuting cases, I think this could be really key to addressing our domestic violence and sexual assault problems that have been a chronic plague in our state, and I look forward to working with all of you on that. Thank you.
Are there questions from committee members on the intent of the bill? Diana, could you walk us through the sectional, the structure of the bill?
Thank you. For the record, I'm Diana Rhodes, staff to Representative Tarr. Sections 1 and 2 mandate that all Alaska police officers receive at least 12 hours of sexual assault training in addition to their existing domestic violence training. Section 3 defines sexual assault. Section 4 mandates those two victim-centered approaches to reporting sexual assaults that Representative Tarr had mentioned. Section 5 defines vulnerable adult. Section 6 mandates that by November 1 of each year, the Department of Public Safety must deliver a report to the legislature about the inventory of the untested kits. And then Section 7 sets the July 1, 2018 effective date.
Are there questions on the sectional? I was writing down comments on Section 1. Could you recover what Section 4 does?
Section 4 outlines the two reporting options. The one option is the anonymous report, and the other option is the police report.
Thank you. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing none, thank you for presenting House Bill 31.
Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
With that, I'd like to open the public hearing on the Senate CS for the CS for House Bill 31, an act relating to law enforcement training in domestic violence and sexual assault, relating to sexual assault investigation protocols, requiring an inventory and report on untested sexual assault examination kits, and providing for an effective date. We do take those around the state who have checked in with LIOs or off-net. Everybody is time-stamped in. So I'm looking for the person who has been waiting the longest. We do have folks online for questioning from public safety afterwards for the committee's edification. We'll take those questions a bit later. The first person waiting to testify from Standing Together Against Rape, Keely Olson from Anchorage, joining us off-net. Keely, welcome to Senate Finance. Your name for the record, affiliation, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Keely Olson, Executive Director of STAR, or Standing Together Against Rape, in Anchorage, Alaska. I am calling to be in full support of the bill. As the bill sponsor, Representative Tarr, noted, we've been working very closely with her office and her staff, and I understand that she has been working with Joyful Heart out of on the East Coast, and the Department of Public Safety, and gleaning information to craft this bill to be the most effective bill that it can be. And we feel very strongly that this is excellent legislation, and we're fully in support of it.
Are there questions from committee members? Keely, thank you for joining us. I hope you have great success if you haven't already had it for your, do you have a spring tea?
We have had a spring concert and benefit, and we have Walk a Mile in Her Shoes coming up at the end of the month. So we have quite a few events going on throughout the month that are raising awareness about Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and I thank you to the chair and former executive director. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Keely. The next invited testimony is Carmen Lowry. Carmen, if you could join us at the microphone, identify yourself for the record, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Carmen Lowry, and I am the executive director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. I want to offer the network's full support of HB 31 and also to express our gratitude, one, for having this hearing and having an opportunity to speak with you all and for your interest in learning more and striving to create victim-centered policies. And also to Representative Tarr and her office, we have been working very closely. This has been a well-informed process from national level and also from the local level. What I want to do is just to draw your attention, in particular, one, to the accountability that is embedded in this piece of legislation. I think that requiring the extra 12 hours of training on sexual assault as well as domestic violence really does mean that the response that victims have, no matter where they are, will be one that will be well-informed, will be victim-centered, and will be trauma-informed. And then I also want to highlight, as I think already has been done, but with those two options that we have available, one would be for an anonymous reporting and the other one would be through law enforcement, that what that does is that serves to provide a victim with immediate opportunities to begin exercising her own self-determination. What we know about sexual assault is that that takes away the ability for a person to make their own choices. All of a sudden, that's gone. So what we want to do is to immediately provide people with opportunities to start exercising their self-determination to say that this might have been taken away from you before, but we're going to work with you so that you have an option to exercise your agency. So I'm available for questions, and thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there questions from committee members? Thank you for your work. Nancy Cordo, calling from Washington. Nancy, if you could identify yourself for the record, any affiliation, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Hi, yes, thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Nancy Cordo. Today I am representing myself in support of House Bill 31. I lived in Alaska for over 20 years, and even though I recently moved to Washington State, Alaska is where I grew up and is where I call home. 3 years ago, I gave the following testimony in front of the 29th State Legislature for HB 117. This Easter marks a two-year timeline from now and the time that I experienced a sexual assault. Although I went to the hospital and police as soon as I was able and fully consented to a full rape kit examination, the kit has still not been fully processed. I am still waiting on the biological evidence portion of my exam. That was my testimony verbatim given 3 years ago in support of HB 117. Today, the only thing that I can say that has changed is that this Easter now marks the five-year anniversary of my sexual assault. The biological DNA portion of my rape kit still remains untested. Over 6 months after my assault, this is a little bit personal, but I learned that there was no sperm from my rape kit. That's very important information because it tells me that I thankfully woke up before the man was able to rape me, and that thankfully all I woke up feeling touch me was most likely just his hands. Over a year and a half after my assault, I learned the results of my blood panel. It took a full year and a half to finally have the validation and confirmation that I was drugged. When I called the number provided to me 5 years ago on my patient discharge instructions, it goes to voicemail. I leave messages and I frequently don't receive callbacks. It is now 2018, 5 years later, and I am still waiting. I'm asking you to please support this bill because I'm tired of calling. Please support House Bill 31 to help provide me and others who have experienced this closure. Thank you very much for hearing me speak today.
Ms. Porto, thank you for calling in to Senate Finance. I'm looking to see if we have a written testimony from you. Have you emailed your testimony, or was that all verbal?
So far, all of my testimonies have been verbal.
Thank you for joining Senate Finance today. Are there questions from committee members? Thank you for calling in support of the bill.
Thank you.
And sharing your story publicly. In the room, we have Judith Kavanaugh. Welcome to Senate Finance. Your name and any affiliation for the record.
Thank you, members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, I'm Judith Kavanaugh, and I'm a Juneau resident in District Q. Today I'm representing myself, and I'm testifying in support of House Bill 31. I'm a now retired emergency room nurse. I worked most of my professional career at Bartlett in the emergency department. And over the years, I've helped to collect evidence on numerous dozens of women who have been sexually assaulted. And I've worked in the early days, when long before there was a team of people to approach the woman, gather evidence as a group. But we've always locally had the support of AWARE. But now there is a much better process in place, both at Bartlett and throughout the state. And so I feel what HB 31 does is to really standardize that approach to care, treatment, evidence collection, and then ultimately testing of the rape kits throughout the state. So I strongly urge you to support this bill.
Are there questions from committee members?
Thank you for letting me testify.
Judith, thank you for waiting this afternoon. I apologize for the delay.
Thank you.
I appreciate your comments and your service to the community of Juneau.
Thank you.
Your community welcomes us each year very graciously. The next person waiting to testify, Allison Curry. Allison, if you join us at the microphone, your name for the record and any affiliation.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Allison Curry. I'm the legislative liaison with Planned Parenthood Votes here in Alaska, and I'm here in strong support of HB 31, as those who spoke before me. Our state has a duty to keep our communities safe, and this bill will have a direct positive impact for victims of sexual assault in our state who are waiting for closure and justice. As a reproductive and sexual health care provider, we are keenly aware of the pervasiveness of sexual assault in the state and across the nation. And as you've already heard and are aware, it's crucial that all sexual assault examination kits are collected, submitted, tested in a timely manner with the victim's consent. Leaving thousands of sexual assault kits untested not only allows sexual predators to evade justice and reoffend, but also leaves thousands of sexual assault victims without closure. We're grateful for the work that lawmakers have already done to address our state's kit backlog, but there is more work to be done. We do support the goals of House Bill 31 as outlined by Representative Tarr and appreciate her leadership on this issue, and we urge this committee to please pass this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for testifying before Senate Finance today. Are there questions from committee members? Thank you, Allison. Is there anyone else in Juneau wishing to testify on House Bill 31? Anyone off net or online? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. With that, I'd like to have some conversation with public safety. I'll start with Kelly Howell. Kelly, are you available off net to the Finance Committee?
Madam Chair, I am here. Can you hear me?
We can. If you could just state your name for the record.
Yeah, for the record, this is Kelly Howell. I'm the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Public Safety.
Kelly, thank you for being online today. My first question is in Section 1. I want to confirm that during police officer training, you're going to have an additional 12 hours and not one 12-hour, as was stated on the record. What does the department plan to do?
Madam Chair, if I may, we do have another representative from Public Safety on the phone, Ms. Randy Brager, who actually provides this training at the Public Safety Training Academy and probably would have a more appropriate response for you if I can defer to her.
Thank you, Ms. Howell. Under your name, it said director. Under his, it just said public safety. So thanks so much. I'm happy to hear. Randy, if you could identify yourself for the record, your affiliation, and then please, on Section 1, could you clarify whether the 12 hours is in addition to the 12 hours of domestic violence or combined with domestic violence and sexual assault?
Yes, ma'am. For the record, my name is Randy Brager. I am a criminal justice planner with the Department of Public Safety, and I previously did much of the academy-based training. Through the chair, to answer your question, the training as it stands right now is meeting the 12-hour requirement for domestic violence. We actually provide 24 hours in our academy, and other departments may do it differently. And then in addition to that, we would be providing 12 hours for sexual assault investigation training. So it would be not combined. It would be in addition to.
Okay, which takes me to the fiscal note that says there's no impact. So you're saying that you already have 24 hours and you'll go back then and review the curriculum that is in the 12 hours so that it is more pointed towards sexual assault. Sometimes sexual assault is described as domestic violence. That's why I'm asking.
Yes, ma'am. To clarify, we provide 24 hours of domestic violence only training. We already provide 12 hours of sexual assault training separately in our academy. So we will be providing a total of 36 hours of training between domestic violence and sexual assault, and they are not combined. They are two separate courses. Other police academies will have to adjust their training to add in that additional 12 hours of sexual assault training to their academies. But as it stands, the Public Safety Academy already meets that requirement, which is why we have a zero fiscal note.
Randy, will this be an unfunded mandate then on other organizations that train public safety officers or law enforcement?
Through the chair, unfortunately, I can't answer that question for the Anchorage Police Department. I do believe that Representative Tarr had conversations with the police department. They currently offer portions of sexual assault training throughout their academy, and so my understanding is that they would have to evaluate what they're offering currently and ensure that they're meeting the 12 hours and the requirements that get listed out.
If I could ask committee members before we bring this bill up to contact your local agencies to just see what the impact might be from around the state, if you could do that for me, that would be helpful. Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Randy? Typically, is that one or two instructors that conducts the 12 hours of instruction, this new instruction we're talking about?
Through the chair, to clarify, are you talking about the sexual assault investigation training, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, sir. It is two instructors that provide that training typically.
Thank you.
Ms. Berger, do you include advocates or those that are in the field of victim advocacy services as part of that training, or is this something that the state does in a standalone way?
Madam Chair, so the training has been developed in partnership with advocates over the years and is approved through the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Historically, the person that's providing the training, such as myself, has advocacy experience. That was my prior job to coming onto the department. I've had 5 years of advocacy experience. We also partner with the Office of Victims' Rights as well to provide a portion of that training. And feel like the advocacy portion is well represented. And then we train in partnership with a corporal at the academy who is a law enforcement officer.
Ms. Berger, do you do any follow-ups with victims to ascertain the effectiveness of the training?
Madam Chair, no, I'm not understanding your question. I don't have any direct conversations with victims directly.
I was wondering after the training how you evaluate whether it's effective with what we're doing. I'll check.
I'm sure we provide the training to law enforcement officers, and so
There's a number of checks and balances within the reporting system for law enforcement officers. Sergeants have to approve reports, have to review, do periodic reviews of their audio tapes and such. If there was any specific issues that got brought up, then there would be internal reviews. But outside of kind of the already in place internal mechanisms for checks and balances and review of their work, we don't have a specific review system of the training itself.
Thank you. Are there other questions from committee members?
Senator Bishop. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have one. I don't know who online from the Department of Public Safety could answer this. If you lived in a perfect world, how long does it take to process one of these kits? And is anybody online that could answer that from public safety?
For the record, this is Oren Dim. I'm the chief of forensic laboratories. Through the chair, Senator, the answer to that is it varies, but our typical round of DNA work is a six-week process, start to finish, from the time a case, from the time all the evidence is in and we are able to start working, to the time that we release a report to an agency.
Senator Bishop, follow up.
I didn't hear the date, ma'am. The time.
I believe it was 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Mr. Dim, did you say 6 weeks?
Through the chair, Senator, 6 weeks. Time from when we start to work the case to when we issue a report.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I would put on the record, at least when I accompanied a victim to a hospital setting in something that's called a SART exam, sexual assault response team. It's a group of people that consists of a law enforcement officer, a nurse or a medical provider, and a victim advocate. That process can range anywhere from a few hours to 12 to 24 hours, depending if they're waiting in line for that actual process. I believe we heard one individual testify today that it's incredibly painful and frustrating not to hear whether your blood work is complete. In blood work, if you're violated in a way that you could exchange either saliva or blood, you may not know whether you've been infected with HIV or hepatitis or any other things. And so blood work being analyzed and providing the victim some assurance that at least the initial reports are fine, as well as the follow-up, and they're not threatened in other ways beyond the initial harm that has already taken place. Then there's the legal process that is very frustrating and challenging for individuals beyond very caring and cooperative SART law enforcement members who have been through multiple levels of training and try to provide a safe environment for a victim to report so that that male or female only has to tell their story once versus multiple times is incredibly long and incredibly non-responsive. Our DAs, as the governor and this administration have said, are in need of additional resources specifically for this action. Cases are difficult to process because it's often he said, she said, or there is drugs involved where the victim may not remember or the time may have elapsed, even the 72 hours have elapsed before they realized that they've been violated in a way they're disoriented for many hours after a drug is involved in some of these situations. So this certainly is one way forward to make things better, but we have a long ways to go. Is there other? I hope that helps, Senator Bishop. That's only it's my personal experience in accompanying a victim. Again, law enforcement, when I accompanied a victim of a sexual assault was very supportive and very caring and has been trained very well in the units in the Anchorage area. I do understand that there's different levels of services in smaller communities that may not be able to do the same type of work that Anchorage law enforcement, or for that matter, I would just give a shout out to our own Fish and Game who have been with me through the process of a SART collection. where Fish and Game travel in with an individual victim from a smaller community as the law enforcement representative to try to assist the victim in the collection of data. So I do have other questions, and I don't know that they can be answered. Ms. Howell, I do not see anyone from legal online, and I did speak to the sponsor about the two forms in Section 4 of options for a police report, and so I'll reach out to law enforcement to follow up with them, but I'll put the question out for both the people of Alaska and for this committee to consider. When you are raped in this state, when there's a sexual assault, at least when I was the executive director, the state of Alaska became stepped into the footsteps of the victim. And this notion of anonymity, of being anonymous, is foreign to me, at least from those previous 10 years. And so what I'd like to understand more from the Department of Law is how the victim is going to be able to take control. Because if we're, I have multiple questions, but that's the crux of the question, is that if the state of Alaska steps in when there is a sexual assault, either for a child or for an adult, then how does the victim retain their control over whether the case goes forward or not? The secondary question on page 3, lines 9 through 18, for a victim to make the call, for the person who has been harmed to make the call of it being anonymous, will we still process the DNA to see if we have a serial rapist and keep the person's name unavailable to the DA or someone to go forward, but still try to go after a serial rapist? Because the whole issue, when I joined Representative Tarr in presenting I Am Evidence 2 and watching the collection in the Detroit area, I believe, was that we have DNA, we have evidence that's out there that could incriminate individuals that are serial rapists. And I'm recalling a study, and for those following at home that are Alaskans, this could be wrong, so please don't repeat it, but I'm recalling a study of incarcerated individuals that folks went in and studied incarcerated individuals for assaults, for arson. I think it was related to arson. And so it's sort of a stair step. If you violate people by taking property, you can escalate. And so there's this escalation that happens over time. As you violate property, then you start violating people, and you escalate. And I'm remembering a study that said something about 300 victims for those that are actually in jail that are involved in some of this. That could be looking at pornography that push that number up. I'm just not sure, but what I'm saying is that we have a huge opportunity in the processing of DNA to place a person in jail who is harming many people. But we may have many people who don't want to go through the legal process because they've watched violations over years, and the disadvantage that the victim is placed in, the person who's been harmed inside of the legal system when defense attorneys go on to the attack in order to preserve or protect their clients. So I just put that out there. I don't mean to, I'm sorry, I had multiple years involved in this issue, as well as Representative Tarr, and just want you to know what I know on this issue. We do have 2-0 fiscal notes that is a little bit concerning. The fiscal notes, maybe understated, is my concern. Senator Bishop, can you cover the fiscal notes for us?
Yes, ma'am. First, Department of Public Safety statewide support allocations, the Training Academy, the OMB component numbers 524. It says 0 fiscal note. You pretty much explained the analyses on the back page at length on the 12 hours we have now come to the light of day that it's a total of 36 hours with the additional 12 hours of new standalone 12 hours of training, so it's a total of 36 hours at the academy. The second statement is a zero physical impact is Department of Public Safety OMB component number. It's in the commissioner's office is 523, and it's zero as well. That's in the commissioner's office.
Are there questions on the fiscal note? With that, I'd like to set this bill aside. Amendments are due by Friday at noon. Representative Tarr, any closing comments from you for our consideration? I'll try to get the Department of Law to clarify the issues for me and then bring them to the table the next time we bring the bill back up.
Well, sure. I appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Kelly Howell from Department of Public Safety may be able to offer a little bit on the questions that you had. So if she's still available, I don't know if you want to move on to something else. But it is a conversation that we've had over and over about sort of the opportunity that exists with processing an untested kit that may have the evidence for someone who's a serial sexual assaulter or serial rapist. So if they can achieve a mechanism for accomplishing that while also allowing a victim to remain anonymous, that could be a very positive thing so that we can have access to the evidence. But again, some individuals want to choose to move on, and they just do not want to have to be put through what will be a very lengthy process and, you know, continual reminder of the event. So I don't know, again, Kelly may be able to add to that, but I just wanted to offer that in case you wanted to ask her of that today. Thank you again so much.
Thank you, Representative Tarr. I think I'm going to hold. I would like to hear from the Department of Law. The issue is stepping in, the state stepping into that position of prosecution, and Kelly may be able to offer advice, but I'll still need to follow up with law. So I appreciate that. Anything else to come before the committee? On tomorrow's agenda at 9 a.m., we'll be bringing up SB 92, vessel registration titles, derelict vessels. Also for tomorrow, we should have HB 287, education funding, up before the committee. At 1:30, we'll have HB 286, the appropriation operating budget, and HB 287, which I've already said, the pupil transportation education bill. So that will be not at 9 o'clock, but at 1:30 tomorrow, the pupil education. With that, we're adjourned.